That's a performance of music by Benjamin Britten, the first of his five flower songs, To Daffodils, a performance by the Cambridge Singers, directed by John Rutter, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. The show's your connection to local performances. Good afternoon, I'm Kevin Kelly. And that is one of many, many, many pieces of music that by Benjamin Britten that will be performed at this week's a symposium at Illinois State University celebrating the centenary of Britten. More about that in a moment, as I'll be talking with two of the organizers of that event. Coming up later this hour, I'll talk with choral director Christina Berger, who heads the choral program at the University of Illinois School of Music. She will be leading the UI Chorale in a concert later this week, and we'll be hearing more about that. But first, this symposium called Benjamin Britten at 100, an American Centenary Symposium, as the title implies, celebrates Britten's 100th birthday, which would have occurred in 2013. Britten, of course, one of the great English composers, and he has a bit of a history of time spent in the United States. In fact, he made his debut in Chicago when he was performing his own first piano concerto. There's a subtitle to this symposium called A Multidisciplinary Symposium of Music, Scholarship, Criticism, Film, Dance, Literature, Art, Theater, and Historical Exhibits. It opens on Thursday, continues on Sunday at the College of Fine Arts at Illinois State University in Normal. And my guest this portion of Live and Local are Carol Carlson, who is director of choral activities at ISU, and also Justin Vickers, who is an assistant professor of voice there. And I really am curious to know what seemed to be the occasion, I mean, except for the obvious centenary, or at least what was the impetus for deciding to do this kind of a symposium, especially of such incredible breadth, at Illinois State?
Well, I can feel this during some early meetings between Carol and I prior to my joining the faculty at Illinois State University. She was already dreaming of a performance of the War Requiem to mark the centenary of Britten's birth. And she said, wow, it really seems like a shame for us to go to all this work and bring all these people together. I wonder if we could do something else. And that piqued my interest. And then we just started brainstorming, and the project became bigger and bigger and bigger, and fortunately no one in the administration at the College of Fine Arts, no one ever said no. So it just kept growing.
That is often a key, isn't it? I mean, you of course you want people to say yes, but if they don't say no, that's probably just as good.
Exactly.
Right, and in fact they were really encouraging the multidisciplinary aspect of it, since we're hoping to bring so many people together. It would be a shame not to feature what would be a College of Fine Arts project. And so it really became something that a lot of the faculty here were able to embrace.
Let's talk about the War Requiem, because it is the first big event of the symposium. It happens on right. The first day, Thursday night. And I got a chance to see a performance of this at Northwestern University many years ago, and had never seen or heard it before, and I was astounded both first by the largeness of the undertaking, and also then the largeness of the conception that Britten had. Tell us a little bit about the piece and some of the rewards of putting it together.
Well, the piece itself is incredible in that Britten, as someone who was raised in post-World War I society, being responding very much to living in a post-war society and living with the poetry, especially of Wilfred Owen, to then make it through the Second World War, fortunately to survive, when so many people around him, so many friends and countrymen did not, he was able to bring together this seminal poetry from Wilfred Owen and interleave that poetry between the Missa Pro Defunctis texts of the Latin Catholic Requiem. And consequently, he had a piece that already resonated with society. Of course, people were familiar with the Requiem texts because it was a mainstay in Western choral literature, But to know so intimately this Wilfred Owen poetry that really touched on the nerve, the heart, the spirit of a country that was recovering, in many ways, they were still recovering from World War I when World War II hit. And so in the early 1960s, when the work was commissioned in 1961, they were still recovering then from World War II as well, of course, both economically, artistically, and still very much emotionally.
So how does the piece sort of absorb the sense of the war? I mean, it's called the War Requiem, but how is it reflected in the piece overall?
Well, spoiler alert, the tenor and the baritone, they sing exclusively in English, and they sing the poetry of Wilfred Owen. There's a wonderful story as to why the tenor and baritone are relegated to singing the English texts, and this was originally composed for Peter Pears, Britain's life partner and muse, and baritone Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau. Both of them, of course, had really exceptional English skills. The soprano for whom it was created, Galina Vishnevskaya, she didn't speak English and would not even be able to fake an English accent. So Britain said, no problem, you'll get all the Latin texts. But the spoiler alert, I suppose, would be at the very end of the evening, you realize that the English and German soldiers who have been singing all night, they're actually the ghosts of the two young men who took each other's lives on the battlefield. And it's a really striking moment in the work that brings all of the horrors of war, and to quote Wilfred Owen, the pity of war. It really brings it so presently to those in attendance, to those hearing the work.
Justin, you're going to be the tenor for this performance, and then John Cook, the baritone. Michelle Vaught, does she say her name?
Vaught,
thank you, the soprano. And then, Carol, you're conducting the proceedings, this massive undertaking.
Yeah, right.
So the question of the rewards of performance goes to you, I guess.
I'm sorry?
The question of rewards of performance. What are some of the things that you as a conductor can take out of this?
Well, just a small backstory is that I sang this with Robert Shaw at Carnegie some almost 20 years ago, and I have wanted to conduct it ever since, and I've never been in a place where this kind of force could be assembled, and the faculty were behind it. In fact, we have many faculty performing in this piece, in the orchestra and in the chamber orchestra and also in the chorus. And colleagues from around the state. I have my friend John Jost, who is bringing Bradley's choir to perform with us. I mean, it's just, it is an amazing undertaking, and it's been a life goal that this be part of something that I can bring to music. And then now I've been here in Central Illinois for 10 years. I wanted to do this here, and when we have the Britain connection, of being in America, in fact, in Central Illinois, in Champaign. I just really wanted to have this piece be part of our legacy.
From the War Requiem of Benjamin Britten, that was the movement Agnus Dei, with the chorus singing the traditional Latin text, and the tenor here, Robert Teer, singing text by Wilfred Owen until the very end, the text, of course, in English. And the performance here, in addition to Robert Teer, featured the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra and Chorus, conducted by Simon Rattle. The complete War Requiem of Britain will be performed by combined forces participating in the Benjamin Britten at 100 Centenary Symposium at Illinois State University, the proceedings being conducted by Carol Carlson, the director of choral activities there, who is one of my guests. This portion of Live and Local, along with one of the co-organizers with Carol of the symposium, Justin Vickers, on the voice faculty at ISU. Our program today on Live and Local is made possible with support of the Friends of WYLL and in part by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, an agency of the state of Illinois. The War Requiem will be preceded by a pre-concert lecture by Chester Alwis from the University of Illinois, and then a fanfare by Britten, the fanfare for St. Edmundsbury, and then some opening remarks from the Dean of the College of Fine Arts. Throughout the symposium, there will be lectures and other spoken events from experts from really all over. And I wondered where you found some of these folks and how you pieced together the, as it were, the spoken portion of this symposium.
Well, I'm a Britten specialist, and his music is central not just to my performing life in recital and concert, and opera, I suppose, but also in scholarship. And as such, it's a rather small community. And so over the course of the last many years, from joining the North American British Music Studies Association, I was fortunate to meet a number of British music scholars, many of whom have become very dear friends, certainly mentors, people whose work I've admired for literally years and years. And many of them are Britten scholars. So we reached out to a handful of those Britten scholars to gauge the interest in having a scholarly conference. And ultimately, we issued an international call for papers, which is one of the typical things you do before a conference. And the response to the call for papers was extraordinary. We had submissions from as far away as China, Australia, throughout Europe, and across the United States, Great Britten, Canada. And ultimately, we've assembled a really incredible conference of some of the world's leading voices. And when I say leading voices, I mean especially that we've got Paul Kildea, who penned Selling Britten, a work that really looks at the commodification of Benjamin Britten's music in the 20th century. But we have the sort of long-awaited centenary biography, which is called Benjamin Britten, A Life in the 20th Century. Paul Kildea is one of the leading voices in Britten scholarship around the world. We also have members from the Britten Peers Foundation, people who are in charge of learning and development. Lucy Walker is our keynote. She comes from the Britten Peers Foundation, as does its librarian, Nicholas Clark. So it's really exciting for us to have certainly leaders from England joining us. There are a handful of other scholars from the UK that are joining us and from Canada. And then throughout the United States, the response was just incredible. Phil Ruprecht, who wrote a really phenomenal theory text called Britten's Musical Language, that is really something that reads sort of like a novel. I mean, he just writes with such fluency that to say it's a theory text is almost reductive. But Phil has become a really dear friend over the last number of years, and he's now the editor of the centenary release called Rethinking Britten, which is a collection of a dozen or so essays, also from many of the leading scholars in the world. We've also got a former director of the Britten Peers Library, Jenny Doctor, who after a couple decades living in the UK is now the director of the Syracuse University Belfer Audio Archive out in New York. So it's wonderful to have Jenny join us. It's just an incredible, sort of unprecedented collection of scholars focused exclusively on Britten, and at that, to have it in America.
Of course, you can't have a Britten symposium without having performances of Britten's music. And besides the War Requiem, there are more or less full-length recitals happening throughout the week, but also smatterings of performances included or interspersed with some of the talks. For example, you have a couple of noontime recitals, noon on Friday, noon on Saturday. Tell us a little bit about what's going to happen at those two events.
Well, the Box Lunch Britain concerts at noontime are held in the gallery, which there's some ephemera and other kinds of Britain materials that people can view. And that's meant to give folks a wide variety of different kinds of Britain's chamber music. And one of those, the first one features faculty, and the second one on Saturday features students.
And then another one of the featured concerts will be on Saturday night. And this is huge because so much of Britain's work was vocal. I mean, certainly lots of orchestral and chamber and other things, but you're doing a whole program on his art of song. Again, a little bit about the breadth of that recital.
Well, yeah, it's very difficult to think of Benjamin Britten and not immediately be brought into the song literature that he composed so fluently throughout his life. And one of the things that Carol and I were thinking, especially as the scope of the symposium really began to grow, was we have to be able to find and pull together artists whom we trust and who we know will deliver world-class performances so that we can focus on other aspects of the symposium. And in fact, we were able to do that by engaging Yvonne Gonzalez-Redman and Jerry Sienna from the faculty of University of Illinois. They'll both be accompanied by Julie Gunn at University of Illinois. I mean, you couldn't get any more world-class than the three of those artists. Add to that our own Deborah Austin, who's performed under George Schulte, to name a few. We've got our countertenor on faculty, Daniel Schutz, accompanied by Tuyen Tanu from our faculty. Then there's alums from the University of Illinois. Tracy Elaine Ford will be performing Quatre Chansons Françaises, which was composed when Britten was 13 years old, sort of silently edited to adjust some French text-setting issues many years later. But we're really getting a wide range of Britten's music, from 1927 through to the Purcell Realizations, and then ultimately one of the very last song cycles called Who Are These Children by the Scots poet William Souter. And this was composed 7 years prior to Britten's death. It's his Opus 84. This will be sung by Jerry Sienna. And because Jerry was not only an instrumental mentor in my life, he was my voice teacher when I was finishing my doctorate at University of Illinois. For me to get to hear him accompanied by Julie Gunn, whom I've long admired, it's a gift. It's a gift for the community, and it's certainly a gift for the symposium.
And that recital called Benjamin Britten and the Art of Song, a recital, will take place on Saturday night at 7:30. That'll be at the Center for the Performing Arts at ISU, as will the Requiem Thursday night. I think I failed to mention where that would happen. And then on Sunday, an interesting presentation that includes dance. Something about that.
Yeah. This was another collaborative. Yeah, I'll field it. Maybe we'll both we both may jump in on this. But Britten's Ballet and More, I think the "and more" tag actually was just we wanted to see this grow, and we wanted to see how it would grow. And when you're doing collaborative works, I think we have to be open to the idea that things will morph, that things will change. And fortunately, this morphed into something that was probably more than we could have imagined, which is wonderful. So we've got faculty members from other universities. Kent Cook is joining us from the Illinois Wesleyan University faculty. He'll be performing Lacrimae with Kate Lewis, violist on the Illinois State University faculty. And they're performing a work called The Lacrimae, which is choreographed by an Illinois State University dance faculty member named Greg Merriman. And it's wonderful to think of original choreography being performed alongside live performances of the music. It's not uncommon for us to attend a dance performance and hear historic recordings. It's very, very special, I think, to attend a dance performance and hear live music. Thank you.
That is actually some of the music that will, in fact, be danced to recording at the event called Britain's Ballet and More as part of the symposium, Benjamin Britten Centenary Celebration, happening at Illinois State University. An American Centenary Symposium happening at Illinois State University Thursday through Sunday on the campus in Normal. My guests, Carol Carlson and Justin Vickers of the ISU faculty, who are two of the four symposium organizers. And the music you just heard, part of the courtly dances from Britten's opera Gloriana. That, of course, an orchestral performance. You will hear, if you go to that event, on Sunday, you'll hear a performance that actually features guitarist Julian Bream. You'll also hear the choral dances from Gloriana, performed by the Madrigal Singers at ISU, conducted by Carol Carlson. That event, Britain's Ballet and More, will happen on Sunday from 11 to 12:30, also at the Center for the Performing Arts. And the last thing I want to ask you about, because I know you guys have to run off to a rehearsal, is a screening of the American premiere of Peter Grimes on Attleboro Beach. And Peter Grimes, one of the best-known operas of Britain. I've seen this at the Met, courtesy of their wonderful film broadcasts. But there's something special about this performance.
This performance is unique, especially because you mentioned the Met broadcasts, and we're going to be screening it before we get another one of those wide cinematic releases in the United States. We've got a special arrangement with the film director, Margaret Williams, and the executive producer, Ann Beresford. Both of them were incredibly excited about the symposium, excited about the idea that the American premiere screening should be given in a place where Britain was being honored so directly. And this Peter Grimes and Attleboro Beach is especially wonderful because during the 2013 July Attleboro Festival for Music and the Arts, they actually built a stage on the Attleboro Beach with the North Sea as the backdrop behind the stage, and the entire production was performed to live audiences right there in the very setting where Peter Grimes would have taken place. George Crabb, who was once the pastor of the Attleboro Parish Church, he composed the poem The Borough in 1810, and it was set in Attleboro and imagined this eponymous character, Peter Grimes, very misunderstood, much maligned by the community in which he lived. And to see this work literally performed where it was imagined is just unprecedented. And the film itself is fantastic. The cinematography is incredible. Stuart Bedford masterfully conducts the orchestra, which was made up of the Britain Peers Orchestra from the 2013 festival season. And we will hear Alan Oakey in the title role. Giselle Allen will be singing Ellen Orford. And it's just something not to be missed. And it's a thrill for us to have it.
Peter Grimes on Attleboro Beach. Thanks, sir. And I realize I mispronounced that name.
It's all right.
Attleboro Beach on a Friday at 7:30, the American premiere of that screening. And the whole symposium, Benjamin Britten at 100, an American Centenary Symposium, starts on Thursday, continues through Sunday at the College of Fine Arts at Illinois State University in Normal. Carol Carlson and Justin Vickers are two of the symposium organizers. Give us a website where people can find the full schedule, because it is very full indeed.
You can find it via College of Fine Arts or Illinois State's College of Fine Arts School of Music, you can Google Benjamin Britten at 100, and likely it will be one of the first things that pops up.
And I think I went Britten Symposium, Illinois State, and it was the first thing that popped up.
Yes, any of those combinations will work.
Yeah. Thanks, Carol and Justin, very much for joining us, and best of luck with this enormous undertaking.
Thank you, Kevin, so much.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's the second of the four sea interludes, as they're known, from Benjamin Britten's opera Peter Grimes, the performance here given by the Ulster Orchestra, conducted by Vernon Handley. And a special screening, the American premiere of the opera Peter Grimes, as set on Aldborough Beach, will be part of the symposium Benjamin Britten at 100 that is happening through Sunday at Illinois State University in Normal. And my thanks to Carol Carlson and Justin Vickers for joining us on the show today to let us know about it. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly.
Hi, I'm Bob Culkeen, station manager here at Illinois Public Media. We just wrapped up our fall membership campaign, and thanks to the generosity of more than 560 supporters, we raised over $90,000 in just 7 days. As your local public media station, we promise to ensure that your investment in high-quality programming remains a wise choice. So from all of us here at WILL, I want to say thank you to everyone who contributed during this pledge drive.
In addition to thanking our friends individually, as it were, we also want to say thanks to The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377. Open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner. Music by Claudio Monteverdi called Fele Amaro, the beginning translation of that. The people have given me bitter gall to drink and vinegar, though I gave them not bitter waters in the desert, but sweet liquid. A performance by the ensemble Pomerium, directed by Alexander Blatchley, from their CD A Voice in the Wilderness, Mannerist Motets of the Renaissance. And in that soprano section in the 16-voice choir, you heard Christina Berger, who happens to be the interim director of choral activities at the University of Illinois School of Music. As such, she is going to be giving her inaugural concert with the University of Illinois Chorale Friday night at 7:30 in the Great Hall of the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, a concert called Filled with Hearing, an evening of a cappella harmony. And it says here, featuring Renaissance cathedral music, Baroque music drama, 20th century part song, shape note hymnody, post-minimalism, and then the one item here that I have never heard of, Enoclassicism?
Sure. The final piece on our concert, Kevin, is by Caleb Burhans, a composer in New York, who was a performing colleague of mine when I lived there. And he has used the word Enoclassical to describe some of his music, indicating the influence of the music of Brian Eno on his own composing.
Okay, then.
I thought it made a good poster copy.
Well, at least it raises questions, and
right.
You did. That's the one you did put in quotation marks. Well, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Kevin.
Christina was on not long ago, just when she was launching her year as the interim choral director at the U of I, and it's great to have her back in town. For those who missed that particular program, and it's been several weeks now, I guess, at least, but may have heard her name. She used to be the director of Amasong in town and is back after quite a number of years away. And it's pretty cool, really, to have somebody who almost literally grew up here, at least academically, mm-hmm. at the University of Illinois, coming back and leading the proceedings. So your first concert.
Mm-hmm. Coming up in days.
You nervous?
No, I'm excited.
There's that.
Yeah.
I admit I haven't been to terribly many concerts of the choral concerts here over the years. I used to sing in the chorale years ago.
We sang together, Kevin.
I was thinking that perhaps we did in that ensemble. But yeah. It seems to me that list of types of music is rather more varied than is typical.
Yes.
At least of the chorale.
Yes, it is.
Tell me a little bit about your approach to programming for this concert.
Sure. You know, when I founded Amasong, one of the things I was able to do for myself was give myself permission to explore genres that were not typically being taken up in my curriculum at school, specifically more vernacular harmony traditions, music not from the sophisticated concert stage, but from communities of regular people singing together. And, you know, there happen to be a number of really exciting ways that people all over the planet have devised for singing together. And I think that, you know, in this generation, as people currently active in the choral art look at what's considered our repertoire, has come to encompass some of these other genres, South African choral music, polyphony from the Republic of Georgia, shape note hymnody, certainly. Shape note hymnody is as far afield as I'm going in this program, but wait till you come to our concert in March.
we'll talk about that then,
yeah,
I guess.
That's right. But I've derived so much pleasure from singing in these other traditions, and I really think it's my responsibility to give my students that experience also. And if we want to make the claim that vocal harmony is an essential human behavior, which I believe it is, then, or at least singing together, sometimes in monophony, depending on what part of the globe you're in, but then we owe it to ourselves to look at how is this manifest in different eras and in different geographical locations and under disparate climatological and political and economic and historical cultural conditions. So,
the music by Monteverdi that I introduced mm-hmm. you with is not itself going to be on this concert, although Monteverdi will be represented.
Yeah, that piece is representative of another that we'll be performing. And the text that you read to the audience, Kevin, those are actually the words of a man named Aquilino Coppini, who was musician and lyricist to the Archbishop of Milan, the Bishop of Milan, during Monteverdi's time. Now, the music that we heard was originally written as a madrigal for five expert solo voices and on love poetry, secular Italian love poetry of Guarini from his long poem, Il Pastor Fido. And of course,
The Faithful Shepherd.
There you go. There you go. And that sort of sounds like a sacred topic, but in fact, we're talking about, you know, the shepherds of Arcadia and whatnot. Not a text fit for singing in church. It's about worldly love. But Coppini thought, man, this music is good. and so he took out the Italian secular lyrics and retrofitted Monteverdi's music with Latin devotional lyrics, texts, so that the music could be sung by choirs, not just one on a part, but by a liturgical choir as part of a service. And it's just stunning vocal sound. And so we're going to be performing another one of these madrigals of Monteverdi that has been retexted by Coppini. The one we're singing is Maria Quid Ploras, Mary, Why Do You Weep, which had formerly been Dorinda, Ah, Diro, or in other words, Dorinda, Do I Dare to Call You Mine? And it's a scene where Mary Magdalene is weeping at the empty tomb, and the angels ask her, why are you weeping? And she says, oh, they've killed the one I loved and the one who gave me life. And the angels say to her, ah, but he's alive, and he will live forever, and you will have him.
Interesting way to put it at the end. The concert on Friday, you've organized into three themes.
Right.
Did you happen to have Halloween in mind? Because one of them is called The Bard, reference to Shakespeare on death. Mm-hmm. The sons of David, and some of these are, including sons who died, mm-hmm. and then a section called Weeping.
Yeah. You know, I didn't. It was when I sat down to write the program notes that I thought, looking at the calendar, I could make a nice connection mm-hmm. with the season of death, you know, with Samhain and Halloween and All Souls Day and whatnot. But, you know, death makes for some really great singing.
It certainly does.
You know, this program grew out of a handful of pieces that I knew I wanted to bring to my students, and then I built around that. I was careful to include some pieces that are a little more up-tempo, up-volume, a little more optimistic. But, there's a lot of death and weeping in this program for sure.
We have one here that is, I gather, of the shape note hymnody type from a CD called Rivers of Delight, American mm-hmm. Folk Hymns from the Sacred Harp Tradition, mm-hmm. Featuring the Word of Mouth Chorus,
yeah.
which a name that sort of speaks to what you started talking about, the notion of vernacular singing, I guess.
Yeah. Well, this is a group that specializes in the shape note style, and I could sit here and talk a lot about how the concept of vocal production is different from what we cultivate at the conservatory, but I'm not sure it bears discussing. If you just play it, I think your listeners will get it right away.
The road to glory seems so long, and sorrows often take my song. I'm going to a better land.
Music by somebody known as O.A. Paris, not a name that I happen to be familiar with. The Better Land, sung by the Word of Mouth Chorus. And some of that type of music will be on a concert by the University of Illinois Chorale, directed by Christina Berger, Friday night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. And my guest is Christina Berger on this portion of Live and Local. For those who know what this term means, that type of singing certainly gives another notion of the idea of chest voice.
Oh, sure. First, let me say that in a way, the example I chose is a poor one because that particular track was performed by four soloists, whereas you're going to hear that sound multiplied times 10 plus. But yeah, you hear a completely different kind of resonance. And one of the fastest ways to work with classically trained singers and encourage them toward that sound, the first thing we tell them is to shrink the size of the oral cavity. Just make a smaller mouth. You know, don't open it up so much in the back. And that already takes the resonance right into the front. And then, you know, when in classical singing, we would encourage the singers to start mixing in their head and voice registers at a certain point in the range. In shape note singing, we avoid doing that until it's, you know, until health dictates that we need to flip over into the other gear. This may be nonsense to listeners who don't sing, but those who sing will know what I'm talking about. And yeah, it took a little bit of coaxing and reminding of the singers because they're having to break muscle memory. You know, when they take a breath and open their mouths to sing, they organize their instrument in one way. And this requires a completely different way of using the instrument. And it's been fun to watch the looks of surprise and pleasure and delight on their faces as they hear and feel this completely different sound around them and coming from them. It's been interesting, though. Anytime we whip out our shape note piece, we notice that our intonation is dead on reliable in ways that it isn't when the singers are using their conservatory voices. So we've been taking some lessons from that.
And speaking of conservatory, I can just imagine that voice faculty everywhere would roll over in their, well, let's say their beds. Listening to this sort of sound.
Oh, well, I sure hope not. I hope my esteemed colleagues are not rolling over. There are people on our voice faculty who also work with vocal productions other than what we would expect to hear on the Western concert stage. But it's absolutely possible to do healthfully and without injury. You know, as long as you've got your breath behind everything you're doing, and you know, we're not singing it for 4 hours like you do when you go to a shape note gathering. No, it actually can be very invigorating and healthful if it's done properly. You know, as a singer myself, I'm not getting in there and hurting my singers, that's for sure.
Well, and I think maybe the key is that you said just a bit ago, certain amount of pleasure that you take seeing the delight, the sense of fun that your singers get once they kind of get over the shock of having to sing this way or trying to sing this way. Mm-hmm. I know a choir I used to work with seemed particularly to like doing music by William Billings, who is of this ilk.
It happens we're doing a Billings tune. Yeah, David's Lamentation.
Which will come under the Sons of David.
That's right.
Portion.
That's right.
Tell me a little bit. We don't have too much time, but tell me a little bit about the structure of the program, the Bard on Death, reference to Shakespeare. Who are some of the folks who are pulled under that category?
Sure. One early 20th century composer, one mid 20th century composer, and one living composer, all who have taken Shakespeare songs about death, texts that appear within Shakespeare's plays, and have set them to music. And these are very familiar poems, you know, Fear No More the Heat of the Sun from Cymbeline, and Full Fathom Five. We're not doing the Vaughan Williams, which I consider to be the greatest setting of that poem, perhaps in a later semester. But that poem about how we're transformed in death into corals and, you know, other natural phenomena. And then Come Away Death from Twelfth Night. That's by Jaakko Mäntyjärvi, who's a Finnish composer, living guy. He was up at NIU just last month working with Eric Johnson, an alumnus from our program. I really, really love his music, and I'm just happy to bring it to my students.
How about the Sons of David? We heard that you mentioned William Billings' music under there.
Well, we're going to start the set off with that, and that'll be hair-raising on its own. And then the rest of the set involves subsets of the chorale. I've divided them out into three chamber ensembles who will perform unconducted and unaccompanied, you know, like real grown-up vocal ensemble artists. So I'm excited. I'm excited for that.
And then the weeping portion.
Yeah, several poems on weeping, including the one about Mary Magdalene, the Monteverdi that I told you about, and a very beloved piece by Ned Roram called Tears, using a poem by John Dowland. And then the end of the final chorus of Carissimi's oratorio Jephtha, which is called Plorate Fili Israel. And then finally, a piece by the man I mentioned, Caleb Burhans, my colleague from New York, a piece that I heard when it came out on his debut CD, you know, just a couple months ago. And I think that this might be the first performance not under his auspices taking place. I kind of hope so. But I heard it on the CD and I thought, yeah, I want to program that one. And that one will not be a cappella. That also involves viola, cello, celesta, vibraphone, glockenspiel, and concert bass drum.
A bunch of struck instruments.
Yeah, two bowed and several struck.
In one way or another. Well, Christina, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show. I'm sure we'll be talking about some of the other concerts as you proceed through your year as the interim director of choral activities at the University of Illinois. The U of I Chorale, under Christina Berger's direction, will perform Friday night at 7:30 in the Follinger Great Hall, the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. And tickets will certainly be available at the door. It's a wonderfully varied program, and pleased to have you on Live and Local. We're going to go out in a moment with a different piece by Caleb Burhans. Mm-hmm. Our program today is made possible by the Illinois State University School of Music, presenting Benjamin Britten at 100, an American Centenary Symposium, beginning this Thursday with a performance of Britten's War Requiem at 7:30 p.m. at ISU's Center for the Performing Arts. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL-FM in HD Urbana, with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. This music by Caleb Burhans called No. Anything you mm-hmm. want to say before we hear as much of it as we can in the time left?
Just that I'm proud to call the singers on this recording friends and people that I have enjoyed singing with. And this is the debut album of the octet Room Full of Teeth, which has been getting a lot of attention, as one of its members composed the piece that won the Pulitzer Prize for composition this year. But that's not what you'll be hearing. You'll be hearing Caleb's piece, which I like even better.
No.